So let's get into our quick hits, and starting with biggest surprise, as we normally do, I have to say that I watched Northwestern go into Lincoln, Nebraska, and upset the 10th-ranked Nebraska Cornhuskers. That's my surprise, but more importantly, Northwestern outrushed Nebraska at home 207-122 in yards rushing. I don't know about you, but that stat alone surprises me.
Nothing surprises me about this Nebraska defense anymore because I just don't get it, especially coming off that Michigan State game. But the Big Ten, it's just become this conference, obviously leaving the stuff off the field aside for a second. It's become this conference of letdown game after letdown game. It's like a snowball effect where every week, you know, somebody's having a letdown game against somebody else. Nebraska delivers one to Michigan State coming off of the two big wins, and then Nebraska loses to a Northwestern team that really hasn't shown much of a pulse this season.
No,
and like you said, so maybe that was predictable, but to do it on the ground, it is surprising, but then at the same time, the Nebraska defense this year has been pretty lousy, which is maybe an even bigger surprise considering what Bo Pelini has kind of built this team around.
I mean, he's a defensive coach, and what happened in this game is three separate Northwestern quarterbacks combined to throw one touchdown and two interceptions, and yet somehow they still won the game 28-25. I mean, Taylor Martinez, it was such a wacky day. Usually his day is on the ground. He throws for 289 yards and two touchdowns, does pretty well there, only runs for 54 yards. It was just a weird, twisted, turned game. I certainly, if Northwestern was to win it, which they did, I wouldn't have thought it would be the way that they did it. But with Nebraska, you never know.
I almost wonder if it was maybe a sandwich game type of thing, mm-hmm. because you had the Michigan State game last week. You knew 8-1 Penn State was coming up. You were going into that game with the huge Big Ten implications. So maybe they just overlooked Northwestern, or maybe they figured if we're going to get beat, we're going to get beat by Persa's arm, so let's go out there and stop the pass. And they did, but apparently they left the run completely out to dry. My biggest surprise, what happened to West Virginia? You know, I keep trying to make a case for the Big East, which is deteriorating. We still haven't really made any time to talk about that here on the show, but West Virginia is the face of this conference, and they consistently flirt with being a great team. They had the awesome offensive performance against LSU, which I thought legitimized them. They went into the Syracuse game a couple weeks ago. I thought they were going to destroy Syracuse after being upset by them the year before. Syracuse beat them 49-23, which was a massive surprise. They bounced back with a win against Rutgers 2 weeks ago, but it wasn't a great win. That was a tough win for them against the team they probably should have beat comfortably. And then last week, they're at home against Louisville. They're a 13-point favorite, and they lose 38-35. And I'm just, I guess I shouldn't be surprised by West Virginia not living up to expectations, because they always seem not to, but I kind of was. Geno Smith, I really thought after the first 5-6 games of the season, he was really establishing himself as a star in college football, and that this West Virginia team could be a two-loss type of team that could actually make the Big East proud come bowl season. Now they might not even go to a BCS bowl, and they certainly don't look like they can beat anybody of stature, considering they lost to Syracuse and Louisville.
I mean, when you're the face of a conference, they won't be the face much longer, but for now they are. You can't afford to tank to the degree that they have. And the reality is, I loved Geno Smith coming into this season, and he lit it up against LSU. You know, the turnovers were a factor, but he still had the yards. But no, I mean, this team just doesn't seem to think that they have a whole lot left to play for. They're not playing with a whole lot of fire or energy. The talent is there with West Virginia on many years, and this year included, but they've played down to the level of their competition, and now it just looks like they're just trying to round out the year and move on to another conference.
Maybe. The game I'm looking forward to this week, that Boise State-TCU game, you know, this is a down year for TCU, there's no question about that, especially on defense. But these two teams have a history of playing some excellent games, and I expect TCU to rise to the occasion here. These are two of the best coaches in college football. Both of these guys are going to have a game plan. It's not like they've had a whole lot of tough games lately that they've had to deal with, so you know they've both been thinking about this game. And you know, as much as I have nothing but great things to say about Kellen Moore and Boise State, if you look at the way they've been beating up on some of these teams, the Air Force game was close for a little while. UNLV, they probably should have beat 62-0. Now, I know it's semantics here. We're just talking about style points. But the UNLV game was actually close in the second quarter. Boise State hasn't been the sharpest we've seen them. And granted, what do you expect from them going up against lousy teams every week? But this TCU game is by far the toughest they've had since Georgia. And I actually think it could be a close game. Boise State's the more well-rounded team. At home on the blue turf, they should win it. But I think it's going to be a good game. I think it'll be a better game than the 14-point spread indicates.
Well, we've seen that Boise State has lost games late in the season to a team like Nevada, for example. And it was a similar feeling game in that Nevada built that one up. They prepared very well for that Boise State team last year. I don't see any reason why TCU can't give a similar effort. I think this has been on their radar for a while. I think that the scouting and the coaching is right there. They have an excellent coaching staff at TCU. I know that they'll be ready for this. And the question is, will they make the plays when they have to against a quarterback that doesn't give you a whole lot of chances at turnovers and mistakes in Kellen Moore? I think that Boise State will win this game. I don't think it's going to be enough to do anything that they wanted out of this win, but I just believe that Boise State, that coaching staff and that quarterback and the way they prepare, they're going to be ready to win this game. I won't say convincingly, but I think they're going to win it in a way that says we're the better team, we're going to finish out our season undefeated, and put us where you will. And that's nothing against TCU. It's more I just believe that much in Boise State.
I agree, but you just look at TCU, they have two losses. Both very close games against Baylor and SMU, two very creative teams on offense, which Boise State obviously is as well. But those were two out-of-conference games. TCU still undefeated in the Mountain West. They'd love to have their farewell tour in the Mountain West and in a championship, Mountain West championship. And they'll fight hard for it. So yeah. I agree. Boise State's the more well-rounded team. This is a statement game for them. They don't lose it at home. Could come down to the wire, though.
You know, for me, I'm looking at Auburn and Georgia this week, and it's a game in the SEC that, people are looking at probably because Georgia right now has a chance this week to clinch the SEC East with a little bit of help. South Carolina losing last week was a big shot in the arm for Georgia, who is getting healthier. I mean, Georgia now, with Mark Richt left for dead earlier in the season, has his Bulldogs position to compete and maybe even win an SEC championship, and they get good news this week with Isaiah Crowell, the standout freshman running back, being back after a one-game suspension. That South Carolina loss, I mean, it was huge for Georgia, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it just goes to show you how busy of a week it is in college football when an SEC matchup between two top 10 teams fell off our radar. We didn't get to it until our second hour here. That Arkansas win was huge for them, too. But yeah, Georgia now in position with this win to essentially win the SEC East, because even if South Carolina does bounce back and beat Florida, Georgia's not going to lose to Kentucky at home next week. This Kentucky team is down. Georgia's going to win that game. So if Georgia wins this one, it's theirs. And with the way they're playing, with the way they've been rolling since the early season hiccups, they could potentially make the SEC championship game a little interesting.
I mean, Auburn is ranked 85th nationally against the run. Crowell being back figures to play a huge role in this game. And if he gets going, Aaron Murray should be able to provide the rest. He's been very solid this season, 23 touchdowns, over 2,000 yards passing in a balanced offense. Georgia's won four of the last five in this series, and you just get the feeling after beating Florida, that's such a huge win for a program like Georgia that couldn't get over the hump in that one for a long time. You get the feeling they're ready to turn the corner and finish this season on a high note. The game against Georgia Tech is still huge, but it has no effect on the SEC East race. So if Florida beats South Carolina and Georgia wins this one, they're going to be in the Georgia Dome in Atlanta, where the Dogs play pretty well. They lost to Boise State in the opener, but outside of that, they are very good in that building. And you wonder, could they give one of those powerhouses from the West a battle? I mean, this is the 7th ranked defense in the country on top of having a balanced offense. So there's a lot to like about Georgia.
Yeah, I think they win this one this week, and I think we find out.
So moving on to upset alert, and as I look at mine, Michigan State goes to Iowa this week, where there's a history of this game never going Michigan State's way. When they go to Kinnick Stadium, they don't win. They've lost 7 straight at Iowa. They lost last year 37-6 to the then you know, to their defense, then number 18 ranked Hawkeyes. But that was the Spartans' only regular season defeat, and it cost them a trip to a BCS bowl. I love Iowa in this game. Again, they're coming off of a win against Michigan, feeling pretty good about themselves. This is a chance that Michigan State has to secure the Legends division, at least stay on top of it. They have a berth in the conference championship game on the line, potentially down the road. It's a roadblock that really is their only one. If you look at it, they have a game that, you know, coming up in the next few weeks. They play Indiana, they play Northwestern. So this really is their chance to put a stronghold on that division. I'm not sure that they can do it against this team in Iowa this week.
Yeah, I wonder. I do think Michigan State's the better team, but there's something about this type of game, you know, and there's something about just the way Iowa is going to carry themselves. And even if you prepare for the game and you know they're Michigan State's, you know, not going to go in scared per se, but it's always in the back of your mind. The players can say what they want about not thinking about the past, but you know that you haven't beat this team here forever. Yeah. So I agree with you. Iowa has a great shot in this one.
I mean, the Spartans were held to 258 yards last year, a season low, 31 on the ground. Kirk Cousins was picked 3 times. This is very reminiscent of when Wisconsin went into Michigan State. They come off of a loss the last year in the same stadium. It's the same thing, 2 years in a row playing in the same stadium, and you get the feeling that Iowa might have the magic again. They did it to Michigan last week. They might do it to Michigan State again this week. It's certainly something to keep an eye on.
I agree, and a much less likely upset, but an upset alert nonetheless. You know, Oklahoma State going into Texas Tech, we've kind of had a good laugh about this. The Texas Tech, they win that Oklahoma game, and they just fall off the face of the earth. They have a pathetic game against Iowa State. They follow that up with a pathetic performance against Texas. So now that we've all just thrown them in the garbage again and moved on with our lives, wouldn't it be fitting if now they just threw us all for another loop and beat another undefeated team out of Oklahoma?
It's totally within Tommy Tuberville's character to do just that.
He's 5-5 straight up against top 5 opponents. That's an incredible stat. I mean, to be 500 against top 5 opponents is remarkable. And, you know, that I just think, especially with what we saw in Oklahoma State's defense last week, it's what we talked about all along. Of course, I just said I was willing to tell them that their defense wasn't so bad. Well, it looks like it's pretty bad again. When the turnover battle isn't going your way and you're giving up a million yards, it doesn't look so good. The recipe for success for Texas Tech is the exact same in the Oklahoma game. And I'd argue, from an offensive perspective, it should be even easier, because this Oklahoma State defense doesn't hold a candle to Oklahoma's defense, which didn't show up for that one, of course. But that was on the road. Now they're at home. They owe their home crowd a big game after that Iowa State sucker game.
Yeah.
So, you know, if Texas Tech comes out firing and this is a shootout, Oklahoma State can shoot out with anybody and probably does end up winning it a lot like they did last week. But
to me, it comes down to Seth Dagey. If he plays well, and he played terrible against Iowa State, but if he plays well, he keeps his team in this game. They can shoot out with Oklahoma State. Like you said, they owe their fans a lot more than what they've given them recently. And if he plays well, then they do have a shot.
So a little bit of everything here on episode 10 of Running the Option. I'm Dave Consolazio. This is Sam Saig. We appreciate you listening, as always. As always, you can email me at VegasDavesDime@gmail.com.
And you can email me at SamSaig@gmail.com.
If you have any questions or comments, thank you guys so much for listening. Hope to have you back next week.
Take care, everybody.